There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The information depicted in this podcast is purely for informational purposes only. Please consult your healthcare professional before making any changes to your lifestyle or routine.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Boost Your Biology podcast. My name is Lucas, and I am the founder of Ergogenic Health. Together in this podcast series, we will go underground to explore cutting-edge health and human performance insights that you simply cannot search on Google to help you upgrade your existence. So, without any further ado, let's jump into today's episode. Today's episode is sponsored by Organifi. If you're into high-performance superfood powder blends to boost your smoothies, then you simply can't go past Organifi. Organifi uses the highest quality plant-based ingredients for optimal health, with organic ingredients and less than 3 grams of sugar per serving. Not only that, but their products are also very delicious. Visit Organifi.com/boost. That is Organifi.com/boost for 20% off all products. That's Organifi.com/boost. What's up, fam? Lucas here. I want to take a moment to announce a couple of things to all my new listeners on the podcast. Firstly, if you're looking to upgrade your brain function, whether that be through reducing brain fog, enhancing verbal fluency, improving confidence, motivation, drive, or even orgasm intensity, then check out my nootropics course, which can be found on my website at www.ergogenic.health. And you'll see at the top, it will say courses, where you can use the discount code BYB15 to save 15% off. In addition, I also have a sleep optimization masterclass and a testosterone optimization course that can also be accessed on my website. Again, you can use the same discount code BYB15 to save 15% off. What's up, everyone, and welcome back to another Boost Your Biology podcast. I'm your host, Lucas, and today I'm joined in with yet another very special guest. We have Dr. Dean St. Mark joining me in from Ireland or the UK?
Yeah, I live in Ireland and technically the UK. So I live in Tyrone, which is Northern Ireland.
Awesome. Well, guys, I'm really, really excited for today's episode. We're going to be talking all things supplements, hormones, PEDs, potentially a little bit on liver health, and just general health optimization. So, Dean,
Welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on, Lucas. I know we've been trying to organize this for quite some time, so I apologize there for the late delay.
Nah, no worries. So, Dean, do you want to give my listeners a bit of a summary on like your story and your mission?
Yeah, so I'm Dr. Dean St. Mart. I have a PhD in synthetic organic chemistry and fluorescent spectroscopy. And prior to that, I have a double honours degree in chemistry and pharmaceutical chemistry, so into pharmacology. So I was very interested in drug development and drug design. And then obviously that brought me into my PhD. But during my PhD, I started to realise that when we develop compounds for medicinal use from the pharmaceutical industry, we tend to try and figure out how we can approach a symptom as opposed to a root cause. So if someone, say, has diabetes, how can we improve blood sugar stability? How can we improve pancreatic beta cell function? We never actually go back to actually what's the root cause of why they lost beta cell sensitivity, or why their pancreas cells have started to fail, or why they don't have insulin sensitivity, or poor glucose management. And I started to realize that we generate these compounds as more so like a crutch rather than actually addressing the underlying health issue that's happening in society. So that sort of stemmed me away from going into pharmaceutical drug design, because I just thought it was not a dead end, but it didn't really align with how my philosophies were starting to develop at that point, that I figured, you know, a lot of diseases can be not ultimately 100% corrected, but you can get a lot of symptom relief by going straight for the root cause as opposed to the band-aid of a pharmaceutical compound.
Mm.
So as probably people who may follow you and know who I am, I'm a bodybuilder, and originally I was a kickboxer. But through bodybuilding, and obviously my background in pharmacology and drug design, there's that whole area of PEDs, performance-enhancing drugs, and steroids. And I started to notice that, you know, as a this was early in my 20s, so I'm 33 at the moment. So in my early 20s, I started to realize that if you wanted information on this sort of stuff, it was all coming from internet forums, or you bought muscular development, and the information you were getting was probably a little biased. It wasn't 100% correct. And my issue there was you had guys giving out what we all call bro science, mm-hmm. where there's no actual application of the principles of pharmacology. So for anyone who studied pharmacology, you then realized that, okay, we follow a series of five steps towards the pharmacokinetics of how a drug enters and leaves the body. So you have liberation, absorption, distribution, metabolism, and excretion. And from that, you then understand how drugs pass between bodily systems or bodily tissues, and how they then interact with the body, which is true pharmacodynamics. But telling someone to take like a standardized dose of an anabolic steroid without any sort of, I guess, coaching or education towards that pharmacology, in my opinion, was quite dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're basically giving a standardized dosing regimen to a population that has so many epigenetic factors that should be considered when we're prescribing these things. Because at the end of the day, prescribing compounds in a medical setting is quite a, I guess, detailed and thought out process. It's not, yes, we have standardized dosages for certain compounds, but for majority, we still need to take into account that person's, say, overall health, kidney function, liver function, before actually saying, well, take this drug to fix your problem.
Mm.
So as I was growing up, you could say, within bodybuilding, I started to realize that even the health management side of things was being poorly educated.
Mm.
And we had certain, I guess, principles. I always laugh at this because it's the easiest example, that if someone has a a problem with the liver or they're worried about the liver, the, like the instant recommendation that was starting to happen on forums, this was years ago, was just take milk thistle or take Live 52, the Ayurvedic Indian herbal medicine. And, you know, it didn't really say to the person, you know, this is what's actually happening in your liver when you take anabolic steroids. Milk thistle and Live 52, yes, there's research there in the literature, but it's probably not going to address the root causes of disease that's happening from your anabolic use. So I started to become, I guess, well known in the UK and Irish bodybuilding scene. Originally, I was an educator for Jordan Peters on his website. And I started to educate people on the root cause, like I said, of why you develop health problems when you take steroids. The ultimate goal here is longevity. To, you know, for someone who's an amateur bodybuilder who's using steroids recreationally, they're not taking into account their health in 20 years or 30 years' time. I always find that the sort of ignorance is bliss attitude towards anabolic use is quite worrying, because you have probably a period of time in your 20s that you probably can get away risk-free from using steroids, provided your dosages are sensible. But the underlying risk will eventually catch up with you if you're not managing your health effectively over the, say, 15 or 20 years after their use. So I started to, you know, speak up a little bit about it and try to make people aware of, if you are going to recommend the usage of these compounds, you need to take an intelligent approach. You need to understand the underlying biochemistry of how these compounds actually interact within the body. And then the easiest way to sort of manage health with PED use is to do regular health checks. It's like the simplest thing, checking your fasting blood glucose, checking your morning blood pressure, your nighttime blood pressure, and then getting to the more advanced of, you know, maybe quarterly blood work, so every 3 months, get your blood work done. Maybe annually or biannually getting an echocardiogram done to check the architecture of your heart and ensure that, you know, each of the four chambers is staying as it should. And if not, you then have a baseline of data collection where if you're getting an echocardiogram every year, every 2 years, when something pops up, you can go, okay, it's probably not wise that I continue on with my usage here, and try and correct some of the damage that's been done. So, if, you know, if we've had left ventricle hypertrophy or we've had enlargement of the septum, there are certain practices and certain supplements that we have some data towards that can help reverse some of that damage. So I wanted to come at it from the perspective of educating guys that the stigma surrounding AAS use from the medical community is coming from, I guess, a very biased approach to these compounds being dangerous, when in fact they were originally clinically used drugs, which have slowly become shunned over time because obviously how they were taken advantage of by elite athletes. And obviously how we determined, I guess, toxicity of these compounds was through the abuse, and ultimately seeing the detrimental side effects that the abuse has had to elite level athletes, as well as, unfortunately, unknowing amateur athletes who have used high dosages on recommendation from a coach who has no background in clinical pharmacology or any sort of training to that matter of drug usage. So that's sort of a little bit of my background, that my mission overall is to really educate and get guys to understand that if they are going to go down this path of AAS use, we need to take an intelligent approach towards the pharmacology, selectively choose the compounds that we're going to incorporate, and then put in health risk management protocols to ensure that when all said and done, that you are still healthy and your longevity of life is prolonged.
Yeah, beautifully summarized, because I think it's just such a huge temptation for, you know, a lot of young men these days between 20 and 30. Like you said, they can get away with quite a lot, but then it'll, like, things will catch up to them in the long run if they're not deploying these harm reduction strategies, or if they don't know what they're doing, with someone like yourself, you know, educate, explaining.
I mean, one of the fundamental things that's like completely oversought with anabolics users or recreational users is the effect that nutrition has on their long-term health.
Mm.
And I always sort of try and explain it that way, that when you use super physiological levels of androgens, you're pushing your body to a point where there's upregulations of certain enzymes that can have detriment to your health. So your liver starts to make more hepatic lipase that destroys your HDL. So now you have less HDL carriers within your blood that effectively recycle triglycerides back to your liver for excretion. You have an upregulation of LDL molecules, which then, depending on your environment and, I guess, your exposure to, I guess, chemicals, toxins, and the foods that you choose to ingest, the oxidation of that LDL becomes the critical factor then to ultimately yield in a cardiovascular adverse event later on in life.
Mm.
And obviously, if you are doing your due diligence to keep your nutrition as healthy as possible whilst using anabolics and ensuring that you're taking in, I guess, adequate levels of antioxidants, limiting exposure to pollutants, you're lowering that LDL oxidation potential.
Mm.
So you're sort of moving away from the old paradigm of high LDLs causing cardiovascular disease. And you're sort of coaching that, yes, androgens will upregulate the amount of LDL carriers you make in your liver as an artifact of how they act on your androgen receptors. But increasing the number of LDL molecules doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have an adverse cardiovascular event later on.
Mm.
The underlying sort of causality comes more so from the LDL ox and ensuring that you are putting strategies in place to try and limit that LDL oxidation. Because ultimately, that's what catches up with you later on in life when you have plaque deposition and calcification in the arteries. That's what hits a 40 or mid-40-year-old previous AS user that's played ignorance is bliss to their AS use in their 20s and ignored their dietary lifestyle for the rest of their, you know, the 20 or so years after using them.
Mm.
So my sort of outset here is that if people are going to go down this route, that it is critical that you take everything into consideration, starting from nutrition all the way to, I guess, their sleep and their sleep hygiene, to ensure that their body is adequately recovering from the exposure to what they're putting into their body.
So what about, let's sort of look at, because I know we've explored a range of organ systems and things like that. Let's look at one which is very much applicable to a lot of my audience that aren't PED, like that don't use PEDs, and that is like looking at insulin sensitivity. Like, what can people do to ensure that they're optimized for, you know, a high level of insulin sensitivity?
So I guess the underlying thing with insulin sensitivity is, I'm sure you're aware, it definitely comes back to your nutritional choices and how the diet is ultimately set up. Then from there, you know, we have genetic differences in people having, again, pancreatic function, and obviously as well, pancreatic lipase secretion. So as we know, high fat diets tend to induce issues surrounding lowering your insulin sensitivity. So we tend to then hoard adipose through increased triglyceride deposition. And that causes, I guess, cells to lose their GLU4 sensitivity.
Mm.
So you're now no longer able to shuttle glucose efficiently into the cell. I guess when it comes to viewing that like diabetic model, we have to assess the energy needs of that person specifically. And also, like I said previously, just there a moment ago, the actual genetic, I guess, underlying genetic expression of specific pancreatic enzymes for digestion. So you could have people who, again, have pancreatic lipase deficiencies where they're not breaking down fats effectively. So that person may not do as well with a high fat diet or going the route of like a ketogenic diet. Even though we sort of see that a low carb, moderate protein, moderate fat diet may improve your insulin sensitivity, if you have issues with lipase underlying genetically, you're going to be setting yourself up for probably increased fat deposition as opposed to energy utilization. On the other side, you could have someone who has a very, I guess, metabolically efficient system where they're producing optimal levels of insulin and are able to handle the digestion of carbohydrates correctly. But slowly over time, either through inactivity or, I guess, lack of training, anything that we're not actually causing muscular contractions, which helps to drive, I guess, glucose transport or glucose oxidation, that as well is going to have an effect towards loss of insulin sensitivity. Mm. So I guess it's a very complex way of looking at things. And then, you know, obviously, supplementation-wise, then we can sort of break it down into insulin mimetics, so compounds that correspond to the function of insulin but is not insulin in the body. And we have compounds like berberine, metformin that change how our body oxidizes glucose on a, I guess, a hepatic level within the liver. And then we have, I guess, insulin sensitizing agents, more so like the likes of minerals like chromium, where people could be chromium deficient and their cells just aren't capable of taking that glucose load on board. And then I guess the fourth one, and this is far out there, but it's sort of, I guess people need to understand that we have AGLEs where your body's being exposed to glycated molecules in your environment, and that can have an impact on your insulin sensitivity. So these advanced glycation end products, AGLEs, can then have an impact on how your body stores these glycosylated molecules. And if we're tracking it through blood glucose, that's what we're looking at through HbA1c and blood work. Your the hemoglobin A1c is a marker of that glycosylation. And for anyone that wants to understand that in a more simple fashion, when your body sort of reaches a threshold for glucose within the blood, it has two choices. It either shunts it into adipose, so the carbohydrates. Very, very difficult process through de novo lipogenesis, where your body converts the carbohydrate to a triglyceride, but it can happen when we start to hit like a period of what we called overspilling. Or what ends up generally happening is your body goes, right, here's a lot of heme red blood cells. I'm just going to stick glucose onto these red blood cells in the event that if there is a hypoglycemic event and your body needs to release glucagon, which releases blood glucose into your bloodstream, you have all these glycosylated red blood cells available for glucagon to go, right, I'm taking all you guys into the blood now to save this person. So the HbA1c is what we're looking at there, that glycosylation of the red blood cells. And when we start to see that trend up, you start to get an appreciation that we either have loss of insulin sensitivity or loss of insulin function. You're not making enough insulin. And that's obviously then you can root cause that back further with fasting insulin checks through blood work, or doing a blood glucose challenge where you have someone fast and you administer, say, 90 grams of glucose and you track their blood glucose then every 2 hours to see how the trend happens.
Mm. Did you ever personally get into tracking your glucose at all, like with the CGM?
I've never done a CGM, but I know from my own epigenetics, from delving into my 23andMe data, type 2 diabetes has a tendency to run on my dad's side, and that actually came back to a lipase deficiency.
Wow.
So for me, I learned that the hard way experimenting. So I've tried ketogenic diet like when I was younger in my 20s. And all I noticed was, yes, I got some energy out of it, but I just got fatter. And I was starting to figure in my head, like, this doesn't make sense from a calories in versus calories out perspective. I should be, you know, still able to perform as athletically as I was on my other calories with carbohydrates included. But I just noticed that there was a slight increase in visceral fat deposition around the abdomen and lower back fat. And obviously, I didn't have an answer at the time as to why. But when I started delving into the epigenetics, I started to see the lipase deficiency.
Wow.
So I even know now when I eat high fat foods or high fatty meals, they cause complete digestive stress. So for me, most of my meals don't tend to go above 10 grams of fat.
Wow. Geez, that's super low, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, for my carbohydrates then, in the reverse, my carbohydrates go anywhere from like 500 to 600 grams per day.
Jeez.
So, you know, you need to understand what, I guess, substrate your body can utilize. Now, that's not to say that you have this side of fat adaptation where you force the body into burning triglycerides. You can do that. But to me, that fat adaptation more so probably is better suited if you're in a calorie deficit where you're trying to force triglyceride usage as opposed to triglycerides coming in through the diet.
Mm.
So more so you become fat adapted when your body is on very, very low carbohydrates with high protein. You're forcing your body then to adapt to the utilization of stored adipose and the utilization then of those triglycerides.
Mm.
But the whole side of understanding your underlying genetics of how you oxidize fuel is very important, because you can then understand what risks you have towards disease management.
Mm. Mm. Just curious, with the lipase deficiency there, does that warrant using digestive enzymes? Like, is that a perfect?
It does. Yeah. So if I, and the trick here for me is if I take, you know, omega-3 supplements like fish oil, I will use a lipase supplement alongside them.
Hmm.
Because that's another thing that people fail to understand is that if you take an omega-3 supplement, if your body is not digesting that fat, that oil correctly, it's just a waste of money.
Yeah.
And you're sort of trying to get people to get their head around that it's really a food as opposed to a supplement. So when you take your 3 grams of fish oil, if you're not digesting that fish oil correctly, you're just wasting money. So I always include, like, say, 10,000 IU FSP of lipase with, and if I go above 15 grams of fat, lipase is a must.
Mm. Interesting.
Otherwise, I end up with just really bad heartburn from the fats just completely slowing down my digestive tract.
Right. Interesting. Dean, I'd like to transition over a little bit away from the longevity and health and more into like the performance enhancement side of things. And I'd like to delve into one of your new products, the pre-pump supplement. Yep. So let's talk about like vasodilation and why that's so important for like athletic performance and bodybuilding and things like that.
Yeah, so I think from the simplest way to explain it is if you're not, I guess if you view the engine of your car as what delivers the fuel to move the parts within a car. And if the pistons within your engine aren't operating correctly, or there's, loss of compression within the pistons of the engine, your engine performance completely slows down. So vasodilation, when it comes to athletic performance, is sort of that process where you're causing blood vessels to dilate. So you now have increased nutrient delivery, which is like the fuel of your car. So within your blood, you're going to carry nutrients like your amino acids, glucose, electrolytes, antioxidants. All these things are going to beneficial the endothelial health, so that you actually then have facilitation of nutrient delivery to what you could say on a simple level, your injured site. So obviously when you cause mechanical stress and muscle protein breakdown, that is an insult to your body. A controlled insult, but an insult none the same, that causes an inflammatory cascade that your body has to then repair. And that's obviously where we then end up with muscle protein synthesis and the increase in myonuclei that facilitates the muscle growing to accommodate to future stress. So without vasodilation, obviously your heart is never going to stop. So you are pumping blood around your body consistently, otherwise you'd be dead. But by facilitating vasodilation, you're also helping to offset some of the negatives that strength training can incorporate, and that's high blood pressure. So obviously when we're engaging in high intensity exercise, there is a small amount of cortisol that is released, and that can cause acute vasoconstriction. So your blood vessels constrict in response to that. So in other words, if you can keep the blood vessels as dilated as possible for that hour of training, you're constantly delivering fuel to where it's needed. So you're sort of balancing this breakdown whilst training with nutrient delivery for muscle protein synthesis, so that ultimately when you finish training, you're actually beginning the recovery process whilst you're training. And I always found it funny that people, you know, drink tons of carbohydrates while training, thinking that this is fueling their training while they're training, but it's actually causing increased recovery post-workout. So, you know, if you're drinking 50 grams of cyclic dextrin or maltodextrin, any sort of simple carbohydrate while training, yes, some of it will actively contribute to glucose oxidation and fuel usage from it. But really what you're doing there is providing substrates for glycogen synthesis post-workout. Yeah. So as your body's depleting your glycogen, you're putting stuff back in to go, right, here's some glucose to start resynthesizing glycogen, so that for the next training bout, you're adequately recovered to train again. So with the vasodilation sort of pump complex, how I view formulations for supplement needs is I sort of look at the synergy of how the ingredients all, I guess, stack with one another and how they can then contribute to an overall effect. So from a simple perspective, if you wanted to cause vasodilation whilst training or to, on a simple level through supplementation, you could use something as simple as L-citrulline or a form of citrulline, because you're feeding then into arginine production. So back in like the 90s, there was this whole big push around arginine being an oral supplement that people were taking grams of, thinking that that caused vasodilation. Yeah. And all that ended up happening was either get people to runs or severe stomach cramps, because the hydrolysis of it in the stomach is horrendous. Whereas citrulline is sort of the precursor to arginine, and obviously through the enzyme endothelial nitric oxide synthase, so ENOS, that converts your citrulline over to arginine, and that causes your vasodilations. So citrulline is probably the main sort of key component here to helping increase arginine production in the body and causing vasodilation in response, because of the nitric oxide that is produced via the breakdown of arginine within your blood. Now the issue there is that's sort of just one side of the equation. You have another enzyme called arginase, which is what robs you of your pump. And arginase is what's breaking down arginine before it can actually yield nitric oxide. So there's a seesaw, I guess, of being able to increase citrulline levels within the blood. And obviously that causes the increase in arginine whilst combating this arginase production. And I think that's sort of where a lot of companies previously used norvaline, which is a isomer of the amino acid valine, and that has an affinity for arginase. So you're sort of using the norvaline to bind onto the arginase and say, okay, off you go. It's going to maintain the arginine content of your blood. So how we can try and maintain arginine levels in the body is preventing its breakdown. And obviously arginase is one side of it, but we also have you know, prooxidants within the blood. So iron, etc., can obviously break down arginine as well. Anything that's going to act as a free radical to take electrons and cause molecular instability. So the acetylglutathione, this concept came previously from a published paper by Kiowa, which is a well-known pharmaceutical company, and they have a published paper on trademarked Cetria glutathione mixed with 6 grams of citrulline. And this was a concept that was previously used in another formula I was involved with. However, I'm always skeptical of some of the data that companies who pay for their own studies publish. Now, the science is perfect. Providing glutathione to your blood, obviously there's, again, a caveat to this, because you'll have people arguing that you don't want antioxidants in your blood to cause the hormetic stress of training. But in this scenario, does that outweigh the benefits of vasodilation and nutrient delivery versus introducing some form of antioxidant? And in my opinion, it does. So S-acetyl glutathione is a acetylated version of glutathione. And glutathione obviously is made up of 3 amino acids. It's a very simple molecule, but those 3 amino acids have potential to be hydrolyzed within your stomach. So if you take oral glutathione, yes, you'll absorb some of it. And we have research to show that oral glutathione raises intravenous glutathione levels through watching what happens to GGT, the gamma glutamyl transferase enzyme in our body. But if you look at the research very carefully, S-acetyl glutathione smashes it out of park, and it's sort of on par to liposomal glutathione.
Wow.
Now, with liposomal glutathione, I can't put liposomal glutathione into a powder, obviously. So the next best thing to me is to go with the acetylated version of glutathione, which bypasses the stomach. And then when it reaches the gut, you have what are known as acetyl transferase enzymes. And that takes the acetyl group off glutathione. So acetyl group is just a COOH group. It takes that away. And basically, the glutathione can then, you know, pass through your gut lining and reach into systemic circulation. So the two of those combined, you know, you're sort of maintaining that high level of, I guess, nitric oxide from the citrulline. Then the rest of the sort of vasodilation complex with the nitrosogen and the vaso-6. So nitrosogen is a arginine silicate compound. So it's, again, it's a form of arginine that's bound to, I think it's hexasilicate. I think it has 6 silicon molecules surrounding it. But basically what that sort of does is it provides a source of arginine again and a source of silicate. And silicate is very important for cardiovascular cell structure. It's a very small trace, I guess, element in the body that you don't really get through diet. Obviously, you don't want to be eating sand or glass or anything like that. That's a form of silicon. So that helps to then obviously contribute to cardiovascular health and provide even more arginine for nitric oxide production. Then the vaso-6, I always laugh. There's always arguments about vaso-6 online with, I guess, formulators or guys that are interested in using compounds for formulation. So vaso-6 is a trademarked, it might actually be patented, I'm not too sure. It's a green tea-derived polyphenol epicogalate complex that, in other words, provides a very high source of antioxidants, ultimately. If anyone wants to Google the research on it, because I could talk about it for 15 or 20 minutes, It's very interesting. You have one side of people that say, again, similar to the glutathione, that it should have no place within a pre-workout because of its antioxidant effects. But again, in my mind, if we can lower that, I guess, oxidative stress to maintain our pump towards the hormetic stress that you're looking for from training, I think it outperforms that, again, similar to the glutathione. So that's sort of, again, similar to why the pomegranate is there and the punagalligans. Completely helps with, I guess the punagalligans are interesting because they contribute to endothelial health. And so the endothelial cells, which make the endothelium within the artery, they're a single cell sheet. And they also have, I guess, a muscular flexibility, you could say. The cells themselves have a flexibility. And that's where we start to see, obviously, as we get older, the endothelial cells lose their flexibility and start to become more rigid. And that's where we start to see a rigidity of the heart, and obviously the rigidity of the heart being able to accommodate stress from high intensity exercise. So maintaining endothelial health is vital as we age, in order to obviously again keep our blood pressure within a normal range because of the health of those cells. And then a Memento pump, as you commented on Instagram, is an Memento Flavone trademarked product. Now, Memento Flavone is one of these compounds that if you put it into PubMed, comes back with tons of research.
Yeah.
And for me, the main sort of side to a Memento pump, funnily, was as a PDE inhibitor. So PDE is phosphodiesterase, and people are probably more familiar with the likes of Cialis or Viagra as the pharmaceutical compounds that stop the degradation of PDE5, which is an enzyme within the tissues of the male genital, which, you know, then facilitates blood flow to the genital, and then obviously you have then blood trapped within the genital for erection. So PDE5 to me is more so for genital sexual function, but PDE overall throughout the whole body is again ensuring that you have vasodilation throughout the whole body. So within the whole sort of complex of vasodilation, the formula is pretty intense. I mean, post-workout, the pump that sort of lasts from Pump Plus is about 4 hours.
Jeez.
It's like when you train arms, for the first hour after training arms, it's very difficult to touch the back of your head. And then, you know, maybe 2 or 3 hours later, you've still got veins quite swollen in your arms because your body's still pumping blood at that high efficiency rate that it was when you were training. I guess then, like, how we sort of complement that then is vasodilation, like I said at the start, delivers nutrients through that increased blood flow. And part of those nutrients is actually electrolytes. So without, I guess, adequate levels of electrolytes, you're not going to have efficient muscular contractions, and you're not going to have efficient delivery of glucose in and out of cells, because again, that operates off a sodium potassium pump. So you want to make sure that we have adequate levels of hydration. And people always get that concept misunderstood, that hydration isn't just how much water you drink, it's actually the balance of how you're hydrating your body with electrolytes. So just because you take in 2 liters of fluid doesn't necessarily mean that your body's utilizing 2 liters of fluid. The side of hydration comes from how your body is able to utilize the fluids that has come in combination with electrolytes to hydrate your cells, take that water inside the cells. So with the hydration complex, I wanted to put in betaine anhydrous, which is trimethylglycine. That technically could fall under like the final part of the formula towards methylation and dopamine support, because trimethylglycine is sort of feeding into folate recycling as well as SAMe. So it's not just involved in hydration. We know that aside to trimethylglycine is that it acts as an osmolyte, so it's able to force fluid into cells. But that's also, I guess, an artifact of how it causes folate and SAMe to recycle also within cells. So the rest with them, with the sea salt and the dipotassium phosphate, that's just providing a source of, the sea salt is obviously a source of sodium, and then the dipotassium phosphate is my preferred source throughout all my formulations of potassium, because you're providing a high dose of potassium, but you're also giving the body a source of phosphate. And obviously phosphate is very critical because it's what provides the phosphate group for, so phosphorus provides the phosphate group for ATP, for adenosine triphosphate or adenosine diphosphate. So having adequate levels of phosphate within your blood is also going to, I guess, keep the formation of ATP going at a higher rate. And then like the last part to me was, a lot of people complain that we have pump products on the market that, so you have different demographics within the pre-workout market. You have someone that's sort of looking for just an ergogenic benefit to when they train. And that's obviously coming from enhanced pump. So you have products that facilitate pump. And then you have people that like a little bit of a stim boost or a nootropic sort of cognitive aid to stimulate their mind so that they're more focused for training or having a bad day at work or stressed day at work that they need to sort of pick me up. And then you have like the third demographic to me, which is people that just like to get off their face on high dopamine driving compounds, monoamine substrates, etc. So with Pump Plus, I wanted it to have an aspect that if someone just used it by itself, there could be a couple of little things in there to help give you this little cognitive boost without having to rely on caffeine or any sort of other adenosine antagonist. So what I've done there is I included 500 milligrams of phenylalanine, which is similar to tyrosine as a precursor to L-DOPA and dopamine. And then the other two, methylfolate and S-adenosyl monomethionine. Both of these are sort of involved in how our amino acid transporters operate within the brain, and also how our synaptic transport of neurotransmitters is influenced. So folate and SAMe, certain people are going to be folate deficient, certain people are going to be metal donor deficient. So I figured, why not provide a balance of sort of 400 micrograms of methylfolate, sort of a standard dose of folate, and 200 milligrams of SAMe is a standard dose of SAMe. So combining the two together, you're sort of giving it in sort of like a 1:1 ratio. So I shouldn't cause any over-methylation or I shouldn't cause any under-methylation. But for those who are sort of on the balance of under-methylating, it's going to be enough that you're actually going to feel very good, because you're going to increase the storage of neurotransmitters within the brain for transport. And then the SAMe is what encourages the neurotransmitters to be delivered to the other side. So you're sort of balancing that brain chemistry there without causing too many neuronal issues. Now, that was a question someone said to me. If you're taking, like, I have a multivitamin developed with supplement needs with 400 micrograms of methylfolate in it also. And he asked, well, what's the implications of stacking the two together? And to be honest, we have data for like up to like 4 grams of methylfolate being given to people as generally safe. The only, for someone who's an over-methylator and they have, low folate stores, that could be a problem. Or you could have someone who's an under-methylator and have high folate stores. That's probably the more detrimental one, where you have sky-high folate and your body's not able to do anything to recycle that folate because there's not enough SAMe. That person, again, putting another 400 micrograms of methylfolate in could be balanced then by adding in more methyl donors to try and help recycle some of that folate. So I don't see the two of them being a big detriment to someone who's taken like folate or other methyl donors, to be honest, at the dosage that's in there. But it's enough to make someone feel very good without having to rely on a caffeine source.
Amazing, man. It's a real shame a lot of other formulators don't go to that level of detail when they put together their supplements. Like, there are so many products on the market that just don't have this thorough thought out structure to it. So it's really awesome to see, and that's why I wanted to bring you on the show, to talk about some of these novel ingredients and how they interact and the synergy and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, so with like the pre-workout market, this is sort of 3 years now into formulating for supplement needs. It was a area of the health and fitness industry that I was very hesitant to go into without having a novel idea. Mm. We're now having a series of products where the consumer was getting the benefit of these highly dosed, selective ingredient, well-formulated products, but that I wasn't just putting something out just for the sake of competing. Because to be honest, the rest of the range that I've formulated sort of stands by itself. So there's no point in just putting a pre-work out together because your rivals have something there as well. So just to fill that product market and try and step on their toes, I was very selective, and I told Lee, who runs Supplement Needs, that I'm waiting till I get a brainstorm of how I can enter the pre-workout market with something that will not change the pre-workout market, but offer something different to consumers and show the consumer that I've put them first.
Mm.
And I always laugh because how I sort of formulate is I'm a little selfish, and I think if I'm making a product, I'm the one that's going to use it too. So I want a product that I'm going to be extremely happy with for myself to use, but show people obviously the underlying formulation science of why I chose X, Y, and Z. Mm. And that was why literally last August, I was over in the Supplement Needs headquarters, and I was just brainstorming with Lee, and it just hit me. I was like, actually, I need to get a pen and paper and write this all down, because it started coming into my head of, you know, Pump Plus, the Focus Plus, the Stim Plus. I said to him, like, here's three products. This is how we offer the consumers these products. And obviously, I started to get to work on the formulations of the ingredients, but the ideas started to come together of, actually, this is how I enter into the market now.
Mm.
And that's how the likes of the Liver Stack, the Heart Stack, the Kidney and Blood Pressure Stack, all these formulations that I made over the previous years, all focused around the synergy of the ingredients whilst looking at the root cause of what I'm trying to fix.
Mm.
So in other words, like the Liver Stack looked at how we can end up with certain liver issues from, say, anabolic steroid use or even environmental insult. And one of the main sort of ways there is either insufficient bile flow or insufficient bile acid production, or I guess fatty acid transport within the liver has been compromised. So you now have increased deposition of these fats within your liver, causing non-alcohol fatty liver disease. So with the Liver Stack, that was like, let's add in Todke, which is a taurocidelic acid, bile acid precursor.
Huge fan of Todke. I just did a video on it on YouTube. It's a very novel, very versatile bile acid.
Comment. Yeah, and I mean, how that sort of then, I guess, fixes not liver damage, but bile flow and bile backflow and cholestasis is like a hidden disease within society that has not many symptoms. But when it goes wrong, that's it. It's very difficult or very slow to correct. And that's why we have all these gallbladder surgeries to remove the gallbladder, because it's just filled with gallstones from that lack of bile acid flow, or I guess adequate bile acid recycling. So I could deliver stack. My thought process there was, let's help that person's bile flow. We'll provide it with a high dose of Todke, a high dose of ox bile, which is a synthetic form of bile that we take from cows. High dose of choline and inositol to help with the fatty acid transport out of the liver. And then the other sort of side was estrogen metabolism, because obviously males and females with xenoestrogens, environmental exposure, I put in a high dose of diindol methane to help with phase one liver metabolism of estrogen compounds, and then a high dose of calcium D-glucuronate, which then offsets phase two, and obviously glucuronidation to excrete these estrogenic compounds via your urine. Mm. And that sort of encompasses then liver health, in that you're stopping cholestasis and lack of bile flow, and you're helping take some of the stress away from the deliver of, if you have, I guess, enterohepatic recirculation of estrogen from your gut, your liver is just constantly trying to get rid of this estrogen and it's going nowhere. So that's sort of like how I view formulating with these, I guess, supplements for supplement needs is, where's the root cause and where's sort of the end goal for the consumer?
Amazing. As you were talking about, I want to quickly share a little bit of research on the Amento Flavone. I know you talked about if you put it in PubMed, you see hundreds of results. I actually think of Amento Flavone as the next resveratrol. Like, it's just got so much awesome research, neuroprotection, protecting the liver, protecting so many organs. I love it. I just love that ingredient.
I think that what happened with resveratrol was that there wasn't enough buy-in into it because of the oral bioavailability.
Yeah.
But similarly to that, I have a liposomal form of curcumin and resveratrol with supplement needs because I understand that when people are buying these supplements, when they're buying resveratrol, they're buying curcumin for the curcuminoids, the oral bioavailability of these compounds is really poor.
Yeah.
And I'd rather someone understand that, okay, you can buy resveratrol maybe for maybe 15 British pounds. You could, you know, you might get a supplement that has 250 milligrams for a month at 15 pounds, and the same with a cheap curcumin. I'd rather someone understand that, say, the liposomal version, say 35 pounds with a 2 in a minute, but you know that the oral bioavailability of what your body actually uptakes into your cells is pretty much close to like 95 to 99% because of the delivery mechanism of the supplements. Mm. And I think that's sort of where, again, within the supplement industry, people aren't really educated on the delivery method of the supplement makes the difference also.
Mm.
And the delivery form. But yeah, Amento, the Amento pump, which is the trademarked form of this specific form of Amento Flavone. Again, if you type that into Google, they'll bring up some research that they've done themselves on it too.
Mm.
But it's going into the future. I think like if people are just going to regurgitate the same things over and over again, people that don't understand supplements will just go into a supplement store and ask for something and be given anything because at the end of the day, that company is just looking at sales.
Yeah.
Whereas what I want ultimately is that someone either goes into a store that stocks supplement needs or goes through an online retailer and actually understands the science behind the product and understanding that it's been actually made to augment your goals and to have you in mind, although you're paying sort of a premium price. So, you know, Pump Plus is nearly 40 British pounds for 30 servings. Now, if you break that down, each workout is maybe about £1.20. It's not a huge, I mean, it's less than a cup of coffee to ensure that, you know, you're going to be very adequately hydrated and your vasodilation within your blood is going to be sky high.
Mm.
Is that worth versus buying another cheaper product that might be £25, £30. To me, going sort of the route of the premium level and being able to explain to the consumer that this is why it's slightly more expensive, you get that buy-in then to the trust of, you know, you're putting stuff out there with people first and profit second.
Mm. Mm. So, Dean, what about, like, we've got enough time to talk about your latest nootropic formula. Let's dive into that. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Let me get it up on the screen because I've got that many formulas in my head that just be difficult to remember exactly everything specifically. So the nootropic formula, so I have actually two technically nootropic-based supplements with supplement needs. I have the AM priming stack, which is like an adaptogen-based, you could technically call it nootropic because of the likes of the bacopa and also the periwinkle extract, which has an amount of vimpocetine in it. And that's sort of designed to, I guess, lower morning cortisol or cause adaptation to stress through the adaptogens. So with Focus Plus, that was like the second part to the pre-workout trifecta that I formulated. With Focus Plus, I wanted a product that anyone could use, to be honest. I didn't just want it to be a pre-workout that, you know, technically a pre-workout ticks all the boxes of, gives you increased focus, provides probably a little bit of caffeine, and then a couple of pump ingredients, like you might have a sprinkle of beta-alanine and citrulline within it. That's like your cheap formula, to be honest. What I wanted here was, because Pump Plus was so complex, I wanted another product that effectively ticked off the box of providing the energy and focus that should come from a pre-workout, but in a completely separate product. So on days where you just wanted your pump, you took Pump Plus. And when you wanted that little bit of cognitive boost, you added in Focus Plus. And then the third part of the formula is Stim Plus, which is all monoamine precursors to drive dopamine sky high and have someone highly stimulated off the back of the caffeine. But with Focus Plus, the sort of main complaint we get from people with pre-workouts is that a lot of companies either use caffeine dimalate or caffeine anhydrous, which are two synthetic forms of caffeine. Very effective at obviously adenosine receptor antagonism and causing alertfulness, but can have some nasty effects either on how the compound is metabolized in the liver and its half-life, remain in the body for hours, depending on that person's, I guess, adenosine receptor gene expression. But also can have quite significant effects to certain individuals on their nervous system health and causing central nervous system activity and obviously that sympathetic nervous system response, driving again monoamine and dopamine secretion and norepinephrine and anxiety. So I wanted to go the route that you're getting some form of caffeine, but I wasn't just hammering you with synthetic forms. So I went the route of including two trademark forms. First of all, there was Pure Caff, which is a derived form from green coffee extract. So it's still standardized sort of to a caffeine dose rather than putting green coffee bean extract into the product. You're still getting a standardized dose of 100 milligrams of caffeine, but it's derived from coffee bean extract. And then I wanted something that sort of balanced that out with another sort of naturally derived form of caffeine, which is a time-released form that is slowly hydrolyzed in the stomach to enter into your blood system. So what you're doing there is you're providing a slow, steady dosage of caffeine into the body without hammering someone with 200, 300 milligrams of caffeine anhydrous 40 minutes before they train, having them, you know, completely wired. And then after they train, after about 2 hours, all that blood flow, yeah, that's been going around the body starts to slow down and you get this crash. And obviously with the crash, you have decreased appetite. And I'm sure plenty of people have had that where post-workout, especially after, say, an intense leg training or something that's derived sympathetic nervous system activity sky high, that you just don't want to eat. And that's not going to be beneficial to, obviously, your recovery. So with the two forms of caffeine, I wanted to make sure that that person wasn't going to, I guess, suffer the negative side effects of the nervous system stimulation, but get the cognitive stimulation aspects of the caffeine. Mm. So at 200 milligrams, most people should be able to handle it. You know, it's probably a medium-sized coffee, to be honest, which is fine. And then from that, it's sort of then broken down into, like I said, I sort of view these things as a stacking and how the synergy of the ingredients goes. So for the cognitive aspect of when we're training, we're looking at really driving acetylcholine levels in the brain quite high. Again, acetylcholine plays into memories, but also plays into our understanding and our cognition in the present moment. So by providing a high level of choline donors, you're driving this acetylcholine production quite high, and you're sort of getting zoned in. And how I done that was through two forms of choline, basically through alpha GPC, so through the glycerol phospholipid choline, and then through cetylcholine, which is choline CDP, which is just like another longer chain version of choline. Between the two of them, you're getting, 1.1 grams of choline donors. Now, obviously, the alpha GPC is at 600 milligrams, and people have to understand that when you use alpha GPC, the standardized weight of it doesn't actively mean you're getting 600 milligrams of alpha GPC. The form that we use is at 50% standardized, which is the highest form you can use. So effectively, you're getting 300 milligrams of choline from that 600 milligrams of alpha GPC. So between those two, you are, effectively causing higher levels of acetylcholine, higher levels of focus and concentration. And then huperzine A, or huperzerate, which is a plant, how that affects your neurochemistry is that it acts as an acetylcholine esterase inhibitor. So as you're creating acetylcholine within the brain, you have this inhibition enzyme that's breaking down acetylcholine within the synapse. So, you're starting to cause degradation of that neurotransmitter and its effects. So with huperzine, you're just prolonging the, half-life or time life of that neurotransmitter within the synapse so that it has a prolonged effect. And it's just a standardized dose of 100 micrograms, which is fair, like well tolerated with people. Then the next one is sort of acetyl L-carnitine, which is one of these sort of funky molecules that has benefits to, dopamine and serotonin. It also has effects towards mitochondrial biogenesis. It has effects towards, blood flow, cerebral blood flow. There's so many effects that acetyl L-carnitine has to your brain.
Yeah.
That it was just one of these ones that 50 and 100 milligrams, which is a standardized dosage of it, made sense to augment the choline aspect and then the dopaminergic aspect through what I feel is like a really sort of euphoric blend that I've put in here, where you're getting 1.5 grams of L-tyrosine. So that, like we said a while back with phenylalanine, that's the precursor to dopamine. So here I'm just bombarding your brain with dopamine precursors. So you're getting 1.5 grams of tyrosine. You're getting 500 milligrams of mucana purines, which is a plant that has a standardized amount of L-dopa within it. So you're sort of, it's sort of like the Griffinonia plant for 5-HTP. So you're providing the body with, without having to do the tyrosine dehydroxylase enzyme, you're bypassing that, and you're providing straight L-dopa that then just needs P5P to go off the dopamine. And then the 500 milligrams of DL-phenylalanine as well. So you're looking at 2.5 grams here of dopamine precursors that when you take this sort of, how I view this product is, it's not like your typical pre-workout where you want to take this like half an hour before you train. How this works most efficiently is you take about 90 minutes before you train, or even 2 hours, because at that point, everything is starting to accumulate. It's not like something that you drink in your car driving to the gym, because by the time you train, it's then starting to work. And you're going to be very, very motivated to go back and train. So the timing of this product is very important, that it's taken like a couple of hours before you train, because when this kicks in, the focus and the euphoria and the well-being aspect kicks in, that you want to go and train. And then to round that like dopaminergic sort of stack is P5P, which is pyridoxine 5-phosphate, or the phosphorylated form of vitamin B6. And again, that's involved with, the neurotransmitter transport from synapse to synapse, as well as the conversion of L-dopa to dopamine within the brain also. So a small standardized dose of 20 milligrams is just going to help augment that just because you're providing the body with all these dopamine sources doesn't mean that you're going to create L-DOPA or dopamine if you don't have the necessary cofactor presence, which is P5P. Mm. And then to round it off, I just sort of went this sort of funky way with trying to help with neurogenesis, help with, again, antioxidant, I guess, neuronal health within the brain through the use of lion's mane, and then ginkgo biloba is another sort of very interesting herb because it has neurogenesis properties, it has sort of a nootropic based effect within the brain. It also, like what we spoke sort of at the start of the conversation before you recorded, it has effects on ADH and aldosterone in the body as well. So it has all these positive effects that between the two of them, it sort of just rounds out this sort of neurochemistry aspect of choline and dopamine with this sort of neuronal health of the lion's mane and ginkgo. And then ultimately, sort of, again, this is sort of where I come from with formulation science. Focus Plus is like the perfect addition then to the AM priming stack. So by taking the two of them in the morning, you're sort of providing this really high complex of adaptogens. So the AM priming stack, because off the top of my head, I'm not going to get it right. Like the AM priming stack has 800 milligrams of holy basil, 700 milligrams of Siberian ginseng, 600 milligrams of KSM 66 ashwagandha, 340 milligrams of rhodiola rosea, 300 milligrams of bacopa moneri, and 200 milligrams of periwinkle. Like between those six ingredients stacked with focus, you take those two in the morning and you can't be nothing but productive. Because you have this perfect environment where nothing's going to stress you out. The holy basil has you completely mellowed out. The periwinkle's driving all this cerebral blood flow. And then the Focus Plus is sort of hitting you with all this choline and dopamine and, I guess, neurogenesis properties of the lion's mane, that you have this sort of perfect setup between the two for morning time study and... I guess we had an intense workload if you were an online coach or you were sort of developing content for your own website or something like that. It's between the two of them, I wanted to figure out, you know, all these products in my mind have to have some sort of stacking ability where one complements the other rather than making a product and making something very similar where the consumer is sort of confused. You make it very easy that you can say to your consumers that, okay, if you take AM priming and Focus Plus, you know, this is how the two of them act synergistically to one another, rather than causing conflict within your brand with products that don't actually match one another. Mm. And that's what I've had to be very careful with the brand, is that there is no overlap. And so far, I think we're at 45 products, wow, and about 30 specialized stacks that I've managed to... Like some days I think, where am I going next with these formulas? Because sooner or later, I'm going to run out of ideas. So, but that'll be a challenge then when all said and done, when I'm sort of like at the end where I've got pretty much every sort of base covered within the fitness and health industry towards supplementation. I might need to find a new hobby.
Yeah. Well, for those listening in, I'll make sure to have these selected products on my website so that they can, you know, learn more about them and they can purchase them through, you know, through my website and stuff. And I'm going to help with some education side of things. Like we'll get some blogs so people can learn more about them. More about the ingredients.
And I mean, that's sort of what I have here. We've got an education site coming with supplement needs where... it's interesting because the regulatory bodies of Australia are probably even more strict than the UK.
Yeah.
But with product claims and actually discussing products, legally you can't do that. So legally I can't put on supplement needs how all the products work and how the ingredients work. there's just a legal aspect for the medicines and health regulatory authority. So how we've gotten around that is by creating a education website that is completely unlinked to the actual supplement company itself, but acts as a hub where I can actually put video content discussing all these products so that, again, the consumer can go on to Supplement Needs Education and go to the product breakdowns where I've discussed in detail, like what we've done there, how all these products actually work. And then they can get educated on, okay, that's the product I want to buy, or, oh yeah, that makes sense. I actually like what's being said about that product. And it allows the consumer to get more familiar with the product rather than having to understand, similar to nutrition labels, the back of a supplement.
Yeah.
Because that, it from what I said previously, you have not like an uneducated, I guess, supplement audience, but you have people that will walk into supplement stores and get sold anything just to, you know, if a supplement store owner has made a mistake and has stocked a brand that is really bad, he's really going to be looking for someone to off-sell that stock quite easily without any sort of, I guess, moral conscience that the product is rubbish.
Yeah. Awesome. So. Okay. Well, Dean, that pretty much wraps up, I guess, today's episode. I wanted to finish off with one final question, and that is, I'm just curious to know if there's any area of research you're really passionate about at the moment. Like, is there any particular area of research that you're really excited to look more into?
Jesus, that's a really good question. I'm like one of these people that will look at something and then end up down the rabbit hole with like 50 tabs open and in my browser where I'm like, where did this start from? And I stay fairly clued up on, I guess, emerging research towards anabolic steroids. That's still always going to be sort of my passion. And I sort of dip in and out of different things. Like I look at novel compounds that are being developed. Really very diversified, to be honest. I don't really have any sort of area. Like if something piques my interest, I'll open up PubMed and put in a couple of search terms and then I'll start reading down through like what free access I have. Or, you know, I guess looking at addressing some of the health issues similar to what happens with anabolic steroid usage, getting down to like the key core root causes. That would have been, you know, something I was very passionate about over the last couple of years of really trying to understand in the literature the health mechanisms of why anabolic steroids cause problems. Mm. And I gave a pharmacology talk on the pharmacology of anabolic steroids and their health implications at Body Power in 2019. So Body Power is like the biggest UK fitness industry expo. And I gave a quite an in-depth detailed discussion on how we designed anabolic steroids. But then at the end, I went into the health implications of them. And I started to, you know, make people understand, first and foremost, the effects that these compounds have on your body is ultimately driven by the androgen receptor. So you can sort of say all you want about anabolic steroids being bad, good, great, whatever, but it always comes back to the androgen receptor as the underlying root cause of all health issues for anabolic steroid users. And where that androgen receptor activation then leads to is what's more critically important. Mm. I've spent a lot of time looking into the sort of neurochemistry of anabolic steroids. So that is probably an area that I'm very interested in because it's an underappreciated side effect to anabolic steroids. Mm. And it is something that globally is now going to probably become similar to the low testosterone endemic we have within society. This mental health aspect towards anabolic steroid abuse is going to start coming to the forefront. And it's either going to come in the form of increased beta amyloid plaque deposition within the brain, So people now start developing Alzheimer-like symptoms very early on into their 30s from huge levels of abuse in their 20s. We could have, I guess, the development of schizophrenia, manic depressive disorder, because we have this complete imbalance towards dopamine transport and increases in serotonin because of how anabolic steroids influence your brain. And I just feel that within the next, say, 15 years, we're going to see a lot of, I guess, A&E cases of people who are suffering quite badly with mental health because of the irresponsible coaching that they received or advice that was received online towards some of the quite neurotoxic steroids. Like we're starting to really appreciate that the likes of Trenbolone and more than likely 90 nor testosterones like Nandrolone play a factor in towards oxidative stress within the brain and causing neuronal deficits. And unlike other systems of the body, I guess we all understand that the kidneys are probably the main sort of major health issue to an anabolic steroid user that is a silent killer that can't be reversed. So when you end up at stage 2 kidney disease, you know, there's not much we can do except try and prolong your life and put interventions in place to prolong your life. Mm. The brain is sort of the underappreciated one, where when we get to a point where there's, I guess, loss of neuronal plasticity, where the brain now is no longer functioning correctly, or the neuronal threshold, which is something that is a very interesting thing that people, again, going off on a tangent, androgens stimulate dopamine transport in the brain, as well as estrogen more so. Mm. When you go back to a normal physiological level of testosterone, or you crash your levels post use while you're waiting for the HPTA to recover, your neurons still have this threshold where they're looking for this sky high dopamine in order for you to get aroused or for you to seek pleasure or reward or have drive in your life. And most anabolic users don't understand that post-use, that neuronal threshold is way out here versus when you are natural, is maybe over here. That no matter what you do, sexual dysfunction is going to be present because you're no longer exciting your brain to the same level as when you were on sky-high levels of androgens. And what ends up happening is you get this vicious cycle of androgen steroid-induced hypogonadism, which in other words is that person could be completely fine from a HPTA perspective. So their pituitary and their testicles are producing testosterone and fertility hormones, the LH and FSH, without issue. But they're now at a point where the neurons in their brain are looking for this sky-high neurotransmitter activation. Mm. That the only way they're sort of getting back there is going back onto using steroids and forcing their neurochemistry back in that direction. Mm. And that is a huge complaint of people who use steroids and come off, that loss of libido and sexual function is present even though their blood serum levels are fine. And they end up getting ignored by GPs and conventional medicine because everything in the serum looks correct, but they fail to acknowledge that the neurochemical side effects that have happened from that high use is present. And to be honest, with, I guess, neuronal excitation and that the high level of dopamine, it's very difficult to correct that without patience and allowing the neurons to become desensitized to that high threshold of neurotransmitter. So you fall back to your sort of normal level of neurotransmitter. Mm. And that's sort of something that I get involved a lot with consultations with people surrounding, you know, AAS use and post-cycle loss of libido. And it's, I guess it's disheartening trying to explain to them that you've sort of gotten your position through your high testosterone usage or your high androgen usage, And there's not much that we can do here. Mm. I mean, on one side, you can sort of coach them and say, similar to what's in Focus Plus, you can plough their body with dopamine precursors to try and match what that neuron is looking for in terms of dopamine. But in the long term, that means every single day you're going to have to try and drive dopamine activity sky high in order to feel stimulated. Versus explaining to them that you need this fire to sort of die off a little bit. And the only way you can do that is by removing dopamine stimulation. So it's like you're trying to explain to them, okay, you can't participate in anything that's like highly engaging dopamine-wise. You can't do anything like pornography or anything like that, or masturbation, all these sort of things that stimulate dopamine. And they're sort of trying to get in their head what you're trying to explain to them. And it's only then you start to appreciate how sensitive our neurochemistry is. Mm. And that's probably an area that I delve in and out of with the research, because it's coming. We're going to see, we have 18 and 19-year-olds abusing steroids because some big guy in the gym has told them to take X, Y, and Z without actually, you know, for one thing, like I said, cardiovascular health, kidney health, liver health, to me, they're not like, so the cardiovascular health, like I said, will catch up with you eventually. And the kidney health, if you're ignorant, you'll destroy your kidneys. Your liver is quite resilient, but your mental health, regardless of quality of life towards, if you have an issue with your heart, where you develop heart failure or you develop kidney issues, if your mind goes in you and you're developing Alzheimer's or you're developing cognitive deficits where you can't remember telephone numbers or you can't remember directions, you know, that to me is what's going to really impact your quality of life and put a big burden on the healthcare of society. So,
yeah. Cool. So I guess maybe, Dean, for my listeners, if they want to learn more about you and like your supplements, where can they find you?
Yeah. So my Instagram is DeanSTM. So DEANSTM. The supplements that I formulate with is Supplement Needs. So that's Supplement Needs, SupplementNeeds.co.uk. And on there, you'll find all the Supplement Needs range. And I think they do ship to Australia. Now, I do understand that shipping to Australia can take some time. And it is something that we will look to, obviously, expand distribution out to Australia at some point. But if people want to check it out, they will ship and try and do as good of a package as possible, I guess, on the shipping. And I have a YouTube that's the same handle, DNSTM, but I don't really put too much on there, to be honest. I just don't have enough time. So the SN Education, as I said during the podcast, that's going to be sneducation.com. That's going to launch in the next, I'd say, 4 or 5 weeks. And like I said, that's going to have a full product breakdown library of videos where I'm discussing all of the formulas. So if people want to keep an eye out for that, that's sort of where you're going to catch me now in the next while.
Awesome. Awesome. Dean, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. It's been an absolute pleasure having you.
Yeah, no, it's my absolute pleasure, Lucas. Like I said, it's been on my list, unfortunately, and I'm glad now I've been able to schedule it in. It was an awesome chat.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in to yet another episode of the Boost Your Biology podcast. I look forward to seeing you guys in the next episode.
Thank you everyone for joining in to today's episode. For in-depth show notes and lessons learned, visit nofilter.media/boostyourbiology.
This has been a No Filter Media production.
Say what you want.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.